It's a little more technical than I thought.
Yeah, you thought I was just going to record a Skype call like all those other clowns do. No, this is...
Hello, my name is Björn Bauer. Man, no, I can't. I just tried to say it in my brain, and I got stuck. I got totally stuck. My German is so bad. Hi, this is Björn Bauer. You're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
I am being realistic.
As the story grows.
So you want to go back to Egypt, where it's warm and secure. Are you sorry you bought the one-way ticket when you thought you were sure? You wanted to live in the land of promise, but now it's getting so hard. Are you sorry you're out here in the desert instead of your own backyard?
Eating leeks and onions by the night.
Ooh, what breath, but dining out in style. Ooh, my life's on the skids.
Hey, welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name's Trav. Thanks for joining me today. I am super happy to not talk to an industry person this week. I'm pretty stoked about this guy. I'm going to be stretching this out into two because we talked for such a long time. This is the first time me and this guy ever talked. A guy named Björn Bauer contacted me, told me how much he liked the podcast. Got to email him back and forth a little bit about his story and his background and how the podcast kind of all kind of fell together with his background. And he said, I don't know what your criteria is. I know that it's a music industry podcast, but I would actually like to talk to you and be on it. And I thought, yeah, I do. I do want this guy on here because he has a desperation story when it comes to music. And it kind of does have to do with the music industry because it has to do with how difficult it was to get certain types of music in certain parts of the world. This guy was a missionary's kid and was living in, like, not the most accessible areas. So as you're listening to this guy's story, I just want you to think of how rough we all had it because, you know, we thought it was difficult because we had to scrape 10 bucks together and get to a music shop and actually buy a cassette tape. This guy had nothing and somehow scraped it all together and figured his way into ordering Paramecium CDs. It's a cool story. He became an artist because of it. Part of it was because he didn't have artwork with the cassette tapes that he was getting dubbed for him, and he started drawing stuff on his own. Now the guy teaches art at a charter school. He's an amazing artist, and I'm going to have his website on there. I really want everybody to check it out. I've been thumping on him on Twitter, trying to tell everybody, like, hey, go check this guy out. I really enjoy what he does. He's a great guy, and I'm glad I got to talk to him. And I'm excited to share his story because it isn't the typical I was in a band touring thing. This is I just really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed talking to him. Now we're going to do the Patreon thing. I know. Here we go. Here comes the tithe plate. But check this out. I want to read everybody that I have. Jerry Adams, Chris Mitchell, Jacob Russell, Ben Pike, John Petkow, and Jeremiah Nelson, Jason Snarkthrone, Brad Barber, Eric from Shoot the Shred podcast, and Brett Duncan. You guys are the best. I appreciate it. My little family that's willing to open up their purses and give me a little something every month. And we have a new addition, Josh Toomey. the guy who runs the Talk To Me podcast, had actually had me on last week as the replacement for me not doing a podcast last week because I was on vacation. This guy's rad. He asks me to be on his podcast and then turns around and flips me a couple bucks for doing mine. I mean, I love him. He seems great. So just want to publicly thank everybody that's involved. I still owe a handful of people some postcards and everything. Dude, I'm so lazy when it comes to mailing things. I'll get to it. I promise.
Well, we once complained for something new to munch. The ground opened up and had some of us for lunch. Ooh, such fire and smoke.
So anyway, let's get to the podcast here. You're listening to a little bit of Keith Green. So you want to go back to Egypt? So stoked to put this on the podcast because that's a record that I've actually had in my house since I was a kid. I remember listening. I was putting that on when my very strict Christian parents would only have Christian music in the house, and they were into Rez and this guy Keith Green Bjorn was actually the first guy to mention him in talking to him on the podcast. So I was like, I'm going to play some Keith Green. I dropped little bits here and there of just bands that he said influenced him and really got him to develop into the taste that he has now. Since he's not in a band, I'm not going to play any of his own music because he doesn't have any. But again, I'm going to flip this around and ask you to go hit his website address. It's in the notes. BjornBauerArt.com. All right, enough jibber jabber. Let's get on with it.
So I'm going to throw myself out on a limb. Is it pronounced Bjorn?
Bjorn. That's right. My parents call me Bjorn, and so does my wife, and most of my immediate family does, because in German, or it's a Swedish name, really, but it's, you know, it's common in Europe. And So it actually has a little umlaut on there, and that changes the O sound. But that's just, you know, I live in Oklahoma. It's too complicated to explain to everybody I run into. You know what I mean? So I am completely okay with Bjorn. So I really kind of have a name and I have a variant of my name. So
are you telling me we're supposed to be pronouncing it Muterhead?
Yeah. Muterhead. Yeah. Yeah.
Muterhead.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, and probably any other European, right? Whenever they see those umlauts in a, you know, like a band name, what they're saying in their head would probably going to sound a lot different than what we're imagining, or we just kind of ignore it. It's just like a style thing, right?
Sure.
It's silly. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, whatever. Got it. Well, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you on, Bjorn. I'll do my best.
Oh, you did great. Man. That's awesome.
I don't know why I expected you to have an accent, because your email listed every country I've ever heard of. You've lived in all of them, and I expect you to have, I guess the Oklahoma has sunk in by now, huh?
Well, I think I've always spoken like this. My mom is from New Jersey. She spoke English to me from, you know, the get-go, as long as I can remember. I went to American schools, you know, in elementary school. So I've been surrounded by people speaking, mostly Americans speaking English. And so that's, yeah, I've always been real comfortable with that. So
gotcha.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cool. All right. So let's get to the reason as to why you're on here. This guy sent me an email. Hi, I'm Bjorn. Hope you're doing well. Blah, 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 blah. I'll skim through this. Basically, the impression that I got from this email was, thanks for doing the podcast. I'm really enjoying it. Let me tell you my story. I was born in Germany. Stop right there. You're already more interesting than some people, right? Started completely immersed in the strange world of Christian music. I was obsessed with Petra. I didn't know what else to get my hands on. Moved to the Philippines, wound up in Southeast Asia. And as I'm reading, I'm like, I mean, with all due respect to other people that have sent emails, not that I get a ton of them, but they're always just like, your podcast rules, talk to so-and-so from Extol.
You
know,
yeah.
Okay, thanks, man. I appreciate that too, you know, but,
right.
But you discovered metal in Cambodia through a German UN soldier.
Yes.
And every sentence, I'm just like, oh my God, this guy's getting more and more interesting. This random Indian lady gave me a Seventh Angel tape that changed my life forever. I got to hear that story.
Yeah.
Hang on. We're only part of the way around the globe. He mentions Australian distributor. He moved to Malaysia. I was like, wow. So anyway, blah, 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 blah. You did some interviews for Christian Metal Resource back in the day. I know I've read some of those. Maybe they weren't yours, but I know I've read Christian Metal Resource. Turns out you interviewed people like Chris Raines of Spitfire. Hell, I just got to Chris Raines a couple months ago.
I know.
And you moved to Oklahoma City and became an art teacher, and you do illustration. And I thought, dude, this guy has amazing things to talk about. And then at the end, you were like, I would love to talk to you or something, but I don't know if I'm like interesting enough or whatever. And I was like, wrong. You're totally interesting. I think you'd make a hell of a guest because you have some interesting things to talk about. And I've been pushing you on Twitter a little bit because, as I said before, I'm not a huge art fan. I know what I like, and I think a lot of the stuff you do is really beautiful.
Thank you.
Great work, and you're a teacher. That's, at the risk of sounding cheesy, one of the more important jobs out there. I know that I hear my kids come home and bitch about their teachers, and I think, oh, those poor people, what a thankless job, you know? So you have the floor, man. I'm done talking. I set you up a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, meet my new friend Bjorn. I want to hear your story. Shoot.
Cool. Well, you kind of, so, you know, what I emailed you was kind of in a nutshell. I tried to compress it into, like, you know, tidbits that would kind of give an idea of kind of where I've been and where I came from and all that kind of stuff. So,
okay.
Where should I start? Like what in particular are you, like, cause there's a lot to tell. Any particular stuff?
That's the beautiful part. You were born in Germany.
Yeah.
And you were immersed in a world of Christian music. So
right.
why on earth would that be something that a German kid would fall into? Because I only know my side of the pond.
Right.
I know what a Southeast Pennsylvania kid does to find it. What does a kid in Germany do to find a Petra album?
It gives me a bit of an angle.
There you go.
Well, so my dad was a pastor. Some of my earliest memories, and
already had rules.
Sure. And he was also, you know, worship leader, played guitar, all that kind of stuff. Some of my earliest memories would be, you know, he'd put on Phil Keaggy and who are the other people? Keith Green records. Those are some of my very earliest memories. All right, and I was like, Dad, what's that? You know, of course, I was saying this in German at the time. We still spoke German then, but But those were some of my earliest questions. I'd hear this music, I'd be like, well, what's that? You know, and he didn't really say a whole lot. I was probably four. He's like, oh, that's Phil Keaggy. He's a guitar player, and I was like, okay, cool.
He's an amazing guitar player.
Yes. And then later on, he kind of told me, I guess he lost a finger. I don't remember even the story that much. So anyway, that's kind of the start of that.
Okay.
And so this was, you know, early 80s. Especially if you're kind of the impression I got just as a kid, if you're in the church in Europe, you don't even really mess with secular music at all. It's almost like most people I interacted with didn't even have it on their radar. I mean, it wasn't so, and so that to me was kind of normal. And so I was like, okay, yeah, this is what we listen to because that's, you know, that's the good, or whatever, you know.
Right.
When I eventually moved and I hung out with more American kids at, you know, in the Philippines and stuff, most of them were into, you know, other stuff, and I was the weird kid for liking Christian music, which is kind of strange. These are mostly missionary kids, you know. I don't know. Weird. That's kind of how that sort of started. Living in Germany, I didn't really listen to that much music. It was mostly just kind of what my parents were playing, right? Okay. And so in 1988, we moved to the Philippines. I was 8 years old at the time.
Why? Why did you move to the Philippines?
Well, my parents became missionaries. So started out pastors, became missionaries. And this is kind of, you know, my dad had felt, you know, called to do this the whole time. So it came as a little bit of a surprise to me as a kid, of course, but this is kind of his what he'd been wanting to do. So we wound up in the Philippines, and this is when, and I'd already been going to like a small private American school in Germany. My parents kind of felt like that would help prepare me for when we're in Southeast Asia and all this kind of stuff. I didn't quite get that at the time, but
So your parents, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interject,
yeah,
but your parents kind of had a plan. Now that we're you know, I could ask why Germany? Well, you were born there, dummy. Why Pennsylvania for me? Okay, fair enough. But you moved to the Philippines because of your parents became missionaries, and they knew this was the first step in, we're going to drag this kid all over the place, right?
Oh, that's interesting. You should say that. Actually, what they told me and what they told my grandparents in Germany, who were, you know, not very excited about this, to say the least.
Okay.
They were like, oh, you know what? We'll probably just be out there for 2 years. And so that's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, yeah, okay. I can do 2 years, see what it's like, you know. And, you know, it's weird thinking, it's kind of some memories, you know, before we, you know, packed everything up and flew, you know, across the globe to go to this strange place that I maybe seen some pictures of, but really didn't know what it was like, you know?
Right.
You know, you kind of have these, you know, you kind of think of it as this paradise or whatever, and you get there and it's raining, it's insanely humid, and there's crushing poverty all around you. Right. So all of that at once as an 8 year old.
Yeah, it doesn't make for a good postcard. Right?
Oh, no, it was kind of intense. So anyway, I mean, so, and at that point, you know, that I think a year later, we'd been there a little while. My dad bought me this. He was like, "You need your own stereo." And I'm like, "Yeah, I do." And so he bought me this little tape deck with a little tape player, and he bought me a Mylon and Broken Heart tape.
Which one? Say crack this guy. Say crack this guy.
The one. Oh, no, not that one. I did have that one. The one after it. And I don't remember the title now.
I don't know.
Yeah. I went and bought that one later. Yeah. So what was kind of interesting in the Philippines, they did have these little Christian bookstores. There were a couple of them. And so once I figured out, I can get this, you know, cool rock music there, and since it's a Christian bookstore, I can pretty much get whatever I want, you know. That's when the Petra obsession, all that kind of stuff happened. So
badass.
Yeah,
Petra and Milo Lefevre.
yeah. And so I would buy, you know, I'd just save up my you know, whatever money I got, and that was one of the main things I would spend it on. I already had this, you know, within a couple months, I had this little collection of tapes, and I'd trade G.I. Joes with my buddies at school, and he's like, "Oh, this tape sucks. I'll trade it to you, whatever." Stuff like that.
Got it.
Yeah. So, and so one thing.
Oh my God. It's so funny you said that. I remember I was born in 75. You were born in, like, I did 80. The math around 80, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I specifically, nice choice in beer, by the way. I love the torpedo. Mm. I specifically remember the transition of, like, I'm still playing with G.I. Joe and Transformers.
Yes.
And music. And I was like, now I'm starting to play with toys while I'm listening to music. And then I was like, I don't want to do the toys anymore. I'm kind of not interested. I'm more interested in the music and reading the liner notes. I remember that, dude. Yep. That's crazy that you brought that up.
Yeah, I had the exact same experience. Totally obsessed with the cover art. you know, I had, you know, the Petra On Fire album, which I know you referenced that in one of your previous podcasts, yeah. But man, that sword was, oh man.
Yeah, man.
That record blew my, that tape blew my mind. It was,
I was at This Means War guy. Yeah. I was at This Means
that,
War
yeah,
guy.
And I knew that one existed, and my friends at school would kind of talk about it. That was one of the few cool Christian albums that, you know,
right.
a fourth grader could listen to for some reason. It was weird.
It's so funny.
And yeah, I finally got my hands on it down the road, like a couple of years later. But yeah, I like that one a lot too. So.
Cool.
I don't, you know, my memories of those are, I have fond memories. I'm kind of scared to listen to them again just because I don't know if they're not going to hold up. I just know they won't.
No, but, they're you know. Not. You're going to have this. I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. Track one, track two, it's going to be nostalgic. You're going to sing along and everything. Track four, you're going to go, you're going to start like reading Twitter while you're listening to it. And you won't even get then you're done. You're right. It doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
So reading further along here, you wound up living in Southeast Asia until you were 19. Is that another move for the missionaries?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So we ended up living in the Philippines until 1992. And I'll just throw this in here because it was just kind of one of these crazy memories. So we were, you know, when we first moved there, we were living in Manila, which is the capital.
Okay.
You know, a pretty big city, right? I think this would have been, and this might be off a bit, so probably 1990, somewhere around there. There was a volcanic eruption out in one of the Philippine provinces. And what that created was not tons of lava or anything, but it was just clouds of ash that would then settle and then create these really intense mudslides. So you mix all that volcanic ash with torrential rain, and you know it created a real mess. And so what happened was a lot of these... there were a lot of indigenous people living kind of in these remote jungle areas up in some of the hillier areas of the Philippines. And so they were just being basically washed away by all these mudslides. They were just driven out. And so they were all concentrated in these refugee camps, basically. I mean, they weren't fleeing an armed conflict. They were fleeing, you know, natural disaster. And we'd kind of been to that area a couple times just to go to the beach. It was like a maybe 7 or 8 hour drive from Manila to get there. And so I remember waking up one morning and there was like a fine like dusting of ash on my floor in my room. And I think within months we had already moved out there. My dad was like, this is where I need to be. You know, he just saw the need of these people, you know? And so he actually ended up starting like a discipleship training school like nearby, and part of what they did was, you know, do work with all these refugees that were, you know, they'd been in really remote areas where they were really hard to reach. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden they were all just together and in dire need, you know. So yeah, that was one thing that kind of happened. And then that was weird because we were just, when we moved out there, it was, you know, you had to drive half an hour to get to a telephone, you know. So it was pretty, you know, we lived in two little bungalows. We couldn't find a house that was big enough for all of us. I'm the oldest of seven kids. I didn't mention that.
I was going to ask if you were an only child because you mentioned your grandparents were upset, but wow, so
at that
far
time,
from an only child.
We were five kids.
Woo!
Yeah, so we were already, you know, pretty big family. So yeah, we had these two little bungalows on this plateau, basically in the middle of nowhere. It was maybe, you know, 5-10 minutes from the beach, so that was kind of cool, but just couldn't get any TV signal, could barely get any mail. Wow. So yeah, that was weird. And so, and I'm still like, I had my little tape collection and I was just, you know, getting so tired of that stuff because I would just listen to it over and over. And I had those things memorized. It was pretty crazy. I remember one day my dad had driven back to Manila for something, and he brought me back the Petra's Beyond Belief album, and that was like one of my happiest moments of my life because I'd wanted it for so long. I knew it existed. I just, I don't know.
Right.
So yeah. Anyway, but that was only about a year and a half that we were out there, and then we moved to Cambodia in '92, and that was just a, you know, just kind of a step up in intensity compared to the Philippines. I mean, we lived in some pretty weird, gone through some weird stuff, you know, coup attempts, typhoons, volcanic eruptions, things like that. There was an earthquake. Coup attempts?
What do you mean? Yeah. What happened? What was your perspective as a kid on that?
It's not as dramatic as you might think. Basically,
sounds scary as shit, you know?
We were like out of school for 2 weeks, and we just kind of hung around in our house and watched TV, and we were stuck there, you know? But we'd see planes flying around, and we'd, you know, we would, you know, just kind of hear about stuff that was going. I mean, parts of the city miles away from us were under siege. Like, all the banks had been basically, like, they were surrounded by these, some kind of rebel force. I don't remember what the specifics of that conflict were. It's probably not going to appear in any history books or anything, but, yeah, it was kind of intense. I mean, we were kind of running out of cash. So my dad was like, well, I'm going to go sell my camera, you know? And I don't think he succeeded. So I, you know, this is one of those things where it's probably a lot more intense than my parents. And we were, you know, me and my siblings were just kind of like hanging out.
Gotcha.
Pretty bored, you know?
Wow.
Kind of happy we weren't in school at the same time. It's like, it's a little weird, you know. You could definitely feel the kind of the unease around us too, for sure. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So,
I think that's a first. I think you're I think you're the first guest to bring that up. Jeez. Wow.
Yeah. And actually it turned in Cambodia, there were several of those as well. And, you know, they were almost so commonplace there that it was just, oh yeah, someone tried to overthrow the government last night, you know. And, you know, it really was kind of like that. You know, and when we moved to Cambodia, it was pretty much directly after it had opened up as a country. So that's why the UN was there. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that, that German UN soldier who was very a great guy, really did me a solid with that shoebox of recorded cassettes that he gave me.
Let's jump into that shoebox.
Oh, man, that shoebox. So,
because at some point we have to move from Petra and Mile and Lefebvre.
Exactly. Into, right. Like, so this was kind of pivotal. Stuff. I mean, really up until then, I mentioned that Violet Burning CD that someone had given me. And I don't know how familiar you are with that band, but our pastor who of the church in Switzerland that had sent us out, he handed us a stack of CDs that they'd gotten through. I mean, it was kind of distributed through, I think, like the Vineyard Church, basically. Okay. And so we ended up just with a copy of it. My dad played it once and didn't really like it. And so I was just kind of fascinated. It was the Strength album. A love like gold. Yeah, I can, and they were so obscure, you know, they really didn't ever have their moment, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was that. I'd had that at that point, and I hadn't really gotten into it yet. But it's still one of you know one of those albums that really has an impact on your life. That was really wonderful for me. But cool. I can't help but speak. My heart's spinning round like wheels. So bad, but you know what I need. Take this love of gold, put it inside, put it. I was just, you know, so we're just to give you some context. Me and my family are living in the middle of Phnom Penh, right? Sort of a post-war scenario, in a sense. you know, they're basically, Cambodia had been liberated and opened its borders, things like that. The UN was there as a peacekeeping force. And so my dad was a part of this mission that was under, called Global Network was the name. It was kind of made it sound bigger than it was, but it was basically a small missions organization that was basically founded by a Cambodian pastor who has an incredible story, which, you know, I could go off on that. I don't really know it well enough to really relate it, but so we were in this really large building in the middle of Phnom Penh. So me and a couple other families, and we had some Cambodian people that were living with us, and a whole group of, like, we basically had an orphanage there.
Okay.
You know, kids that basically we had picked up that, you know, didn't really have a home to go to. So I know there was a guy from the U.S. who was just kind of their dorm parent, more or less, that would just kind of hang out with them all day. It was pretty cool. So it was maybe like a 5-story building, just rows of classrooms. And then it kind of was in this kind of a U shape. Then there was another row of buildings on the other end. So it was kind of enclosed. It almost felt like a little bit, a bit like a prison. And we just kind of hung around this building all day. So me and my family had this little apartment to ourselves. And then pretty much, you know, I was homeschooled at the time. So I would do my homework. And I'd just go down the hallways on my skateboard all day long. And that was kind of my life. Didn't really do much beyond that. We'd play, you know, me and the Cambodian kids, we'd play ping pong and volleyball, stuff like that. But it was, you know, I got pretty depressed around that time. You know, I was 12. And then the longer I was there, it was, you know, it was pretty rough.
Yeah.
Just felt really disconnected from pretty much everything, you know.
Well, you were.
I was, yeah, I was. Completely. You know,
yeah. That's a legitimate
yeah.
feeling.
That's, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, just put it into this really, you know, strange context that I had to figure out. And, you know, I really, you know, when I got there, really tried to make the most of that and, you know, just to try to find some good in it. And I'm pretty much an optimist. So that really stretched that ability, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, my dad had befriended this German UN soldier. I don't know how he met him. Probably ran into him on the street. You know, he's probably on patrol or something. I'd have to ask my dad. What actually happened there, but so I think my dad may have mentioned that, yeah, you know, Bjorn really likes music, you know, he's like, oh, cool, what do you like? And I was like, oh, like, I don't remember what I said, but the next time he comes around to visit, he brings me this whole shoebox full of cassette tapes, and it's like, oh, you know, I mostly listen to heavy metal, so I got the stuff that wasn't too heavy that, you know, I thought you might like, and, you know, there were probably, like, you know, 30 or 40 tapes in there.
Oh, my
none of them
I'm
were
so excited to hear this.
Yeah, none of them had covers. I couldn't see any of the artwork, so they were just titles. And I'd been familiar with a lot of the names.
Okay.
So I think just in magazines and stuff, we had one magazine that was from a German music distributor that had, like, basically a catalog in it, and it had this, like, basically, you know, this whole list of artists and the genre. And so anything that said hard rock or heavy metal next to it, I'd kind of memorize those names and wonder what it sounded like. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah. So I was that desperate to connect with that, right? And I just, you know, that there's no way. So he just dropped.
You're making me feel like such a privileged, like I had it so, I had it really rough because there were times where I could only buy 2 cassettes at a time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm hearing this story and I'm like, dang, man. Like, poor guy. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't mean to interject.
No, it's fine. It's cool. So just to get, like, man, there's some interesting stuff in there. So
let me hear some titles.
Like, yeah. Well, yeah, I've been trying to remember everything. I know there were some White Cross tapes in there. I didn't like those. My little brother really liked them. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was some Stryper in there and didn't connect with that either.
Hey, man, I'm not offended.
And I know you're a Stryper fan.
I'm not that kind of guy! I'll probably not air this episode now, but, you know.
there was there's some Holy Soldier in there, which I didn't like it at first, but eventually I got into that.
Right on.
It's kind of weird. But both their albums were in there. There was some, like, you had some stuff that probably was hard to get even at the time. There were some Guardian albums in there, but they weren't the ones that when they kind of got popular. They were, I think, they may have been demos. I don't know.
They were called something else before they were Guardian, I think.
Possibly. They said Guardian on them, but
they wrote it. Maybe.
So I could be, you know, who knows what that was. It sounded different and it wasn't terribly good. But there, let's see. There was a bunch of Rez Band in there, which that's, you know, I really got into those albums. Those had a pretty big impact on me. What else was in there? The California Metal compilations were in there.
Yes, California Metal 2 was gigantor for me.
Yeah. I listened to that one a lot. Yeah. And there were some songs on there I was like, yeah, that band's cheesy, but I'd still listen to the whole thing.
Yeah,
there was
stuff on there. Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I see the cover, I'm like, oh, goodness, I don't know if I could have done it if I'd seen what it actually looked like. You know?
Yeah. There was some cheese. There was definitely some cheese then.
Yep. There was Leviticus, which was a Swedish band, I think.
I remember that.
Yeah. This band called Legend, which I
remember them.
Yeah, I like that one. It kind of grew on me.
Yeah.
I, you know, they've kind of faded into obscurity. I don't know if they were big or anything at all.
I don't know that I've ever even heard them or Leviticus for that matter, but I remember the name.
Yeah.
Because I used to see the same thing. I would see like a distribution magazine and I would think, well, that band's from another country. I wonder what they sound like. I just pictured everybody looked like Man of War and sang in a different language.
Exactly.
And then you hear this stuff and you're like, oh, it's in English and never mind. I'm a stupid idiot kid.
Well, Swedish bands in particular, I feel like they kind of have their sort of a unique sound, but it's really easy for us to just kind of latch onto and say, yeah, that's awesome. You know, I don't know. It just seems that way. So anyway, that I spent a good year digesting those, and I listened to all of them.
The point is, you're a 12-year-old kid isolated in what would be considered the middle of nowhere in comparison to where we are now,
right?
And you have an extreme limitation on your music to the point that months at a time go by before a Beyond Belief cassette trickles into your life.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this dude just thumps a shoebox with 40 cassettes in it in front of you and essentially changes your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it answers so many questions. So I was aware of this, you know, the heavy metal genre, right? But I'd really only ever heard stuff that would, you know, be considered hard rock, I guess, right? And so I was like, what does this sound like? I wanted to know, you know? I kind of heard it was evil from some people, you know? So there was a little bit of a fascination there, too. Like, man, this has got to be intense. And then what was weird was most of that stuff really didn't sound different to me. It still sounded more or less like about the same intensity level as Petra or whatever, you know? So I was a little disappointed. I was a little let down, honestly. Like, I've always been a complete sucker for that wall of sound, you know, just that heaviness, that intensity, you know? And so while I really, you know, finally having all that music to kind of just have something to explore and really kind of dig into, I still kind of had this question, is like, how is this really different from everything I've heard up until this point, right?
Okay, and that's fair.
Yeah, and so that's
especially, I always talk with my friends about perspective, especially from where you are.
Yes.
Like, now, like over here, it was, if I want to go heavy and more extreme, I have those options. And look at nowadays, you can go on Spotify and listen to anything, you know?
Exactly.
But back then, it was like, not heavy enough. What is that? Not heavy enough. What's that? You had a ceiling. You had walls. You had rules.
Yeah.
And you were kind of like, okay, I can really go through. Like, you can make categories because your entire planet was only 50 cassettes.
Yep.
So you could start building little categories. And this, I find this fascinating. I think people listening too, because maybe they can relate with how spoiled we are. But this is cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, listening to, you know, to talking to somebody, you know, like the Deliverance guy, you know, Jimmy Brown, his story was so fascinating. And I kind of, to me, I was like, I was kind of on the other side of, you know, this stuff was happening, bands like, you know, Tourniquet and all these bands I got into later, all that stuff was happening. And I was kind of way on the other side of the globe, like getting like little glimpses of it and wanting to get into it, but couldn't, you know. I knew right. it was out there, but I had no mm-hmm. way to get to it. So yeah. So anyway, after the shoebox thing, I still had this question. Okay. I don't really understand how this is a different genre. And I didn't, and partly because I don't think I could see the cover art or anything, because that's part of it too, right? It's part of the aesthetic. I couldn't really make the differentiate, you know, that much. It kind of seemed like it was more or less the same stuff, and I was a little disappointed. So
I have a theory that if you would have saw all those crappy hair bands and the yeah. artwork that they actually had, you might not be where you are now, because you might have just been turned off and decided art is terrible.
the cheesier, glammier side of rock music never appealed to me. I always found that weird.
So Striper dressed up with yeah. samurai swords sitting on top of a man, right. Sitting on top of a van isn't the artistic angle you're going for.
That would have been fair, like, enough. That's weird. I do remember seeing,
hey dude, you're wrong, but it's cool. Whatever, man.
This is funny though. I do remember seeing, like, right before we moved to the Philippines as an 8-year-old, we're at a friend's house and he had the To Hell with the Devil LP. And I saw the artwork and I was like, what is that? It was just one of those. It was very strange, and I was like, this is weird. I can't even imagine what that sounds like. And of course, I didn't hear it until like 8 years later or something like that. So
yeah.
But yeah, I do have that memory. It's funny.
You're talking yeah. the one with the four angels and
yes,
like throwing the devil back in hell.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, man. I looked for that thing feverishly because I remember hearing that To Hell is the Devil had a band album cover, and I was like, these guys are my jam, man. They're yeah. Christians and they got their album cover banned. That's amazing.
Did that happen?
I don't know, dude. I don't know if it's legit, because I remember finally seeing a picture of it and I was like, oh, it's not that bad, really.
I mean, yeah, that's weird. Yeah. I hadn't heard that. So anyway, where was I? Okay, so basically after the shoebox thing, you know, when you live in a mission building, basically, you know, you get visitors all the time. So one of these visitors she came from Singapore. She was of Indian ethnicity, but she was from Singapore. And she's really nice, you know, just kind of the kind of person that you're used to meeting, you know, in that context. You know, people are always visiting and that kind of stuff, and kind of coming and going. And mm-hmm. And so one day she's like, "Hey, I have this tape. Do you want it? It's by Seventh Angel." And I was like, okay, I had never heard of them. And I saw the cover. I was like, this is different, you know. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll check it out. Thank you, you know. And so I go listen to it. And I was like, okay, now I understand what heavy metal sounds like.
So this is like is like your first glimpse of heavy metal.
I'd never heard Metallica before.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
I knew they existed because there were some old copies of Time magazine in the building somewhere that was, you know, there was some controversy apparently. I don't remember what it was, but
so at that time, all you knew is that Metallica looked like they sounded cool, but you actually never even heard them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. What a cool story.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, pop in that Seventh Angel tape, and you know, it's like.
Which tape?
I just feel like it's, Lament for the Weary, the second one. Yeah. And if, you know, I think you've mentioned it, so I'm sure you've heard it, but And that's, to me, when I think back on that, I was like, man, that was really the perfect album for me at that time. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Because it, you know, it was in that thrash style, but really mixed with doom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, you know, there wasn't much of that out there at all. So for me to get that at that point, that's just crazy. And so it, I was just, like, when I first started listening to it, I was like, this is so weird. Like, they like go on this riff for minutes before I even hear the vocals, you know? It's like, it's like right. The whole atmosphere is different in this recording, you know? It's darker. It's got this edge. It's, you know, it's really more focused on the instruments and kind of the interaction between the, you know, the band, and the vocals are kind of secondary. And I was like, I've never heard anything like this before. I loved it. That is, yeah. So anyway, that was a big deal. So
how did this woman have that?
I don't know. I have no idea where she would have received this. I can't.
It just seems weird that, I mean,
yeah,
I've never met a lot of women that carry that album around in their purse, exactly. You know?
And, you know, if she'd handed me, like, you know, like some kind of worship tape or something, that would have been totally
made more sense.
Something you'd expect. You know what I mean? Right. I don't know. I can't even imagine.
Here's a question. What did the missionary parents think of Seventh Angel?
You know, I think the missionary parents felt bad for me, and they realized what a big deal music was to me, and they were like, oh, she gave you a tape. Do you like it? I was like, yeah, it's kind of different. I like it, though. And they're like, oh, is it Christian? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it is, actually. And they're like, all right. And that was enough. And, you know, that was enough. So they didn't confiscate or anything like that. Which I'd had friends that did that, which that always made me mad. So my parents right. were generally pretty cool. I mean, they were, I remember my brother, he was a little bit more rebellious than me. He discovered that we'd go, you know, to these marketplaces in Phnom Penh, and you could buy pirated cassette tapes. And he'd found this Bon Jovi tape and convinced my dad to let him buy it. Right. And you know, he's totally stoked on this Bon Jovi album. And my dad's like, okay, he didn't really know what it was. I didn't really care. My dad's German and my mom's American. So
right.
he's just a little bit more easygoing about stuff. You know, my mom was a little bit more protective. And so she grabbed it and read him the lyrics, and you know, they had this big old discussion about it. But at the end of the day, they still let him listen to it. So, so that was kind of how that worked.
Which Bon Jovi album?
Keep the Faith.
Oh wow. Okay, this is later. Okay,
so a little later. Yeah. This would have been. Yeah, this is in the 90s. So,
Keep the Faith. Come on, that sounds Christian. Well, exactly. Sounds Christian and uplifting to me.
And that is, I'm sure, why my dad let him buy it. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine any other way.
The reason why I ask is because if he would have been older or dug deeper and brought the Bon Jovi album New Jersey, to his New Jersey-born mother. I'm just wondering if that would have tugged on some heartstrings and maybe greased.
She'd have been like, oh, New Jersey. Yeah, no, she probably would have.
Greased the axle a little bit, you know what I mean?
He actually did end up buying that and Slippery When Wet. He bought their whole discography from the marketplace in Cambodia. They're all pirated. So I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to get some stuff. So I got a U2 tape and a Phil Collins tape. I was like, that was weird, but okay.
Right.
At this time, you know, I was just so desperate for anything. And because my parents weren't really music fans beyond like worship music, and my mom was like a Randy Stonehill fan. I don't know if you know who that is, but
I do.
So that was
I know the name. But okay, see, I'm so curious about, like, that's the first time you ever heard U2 was buying that pirated cassette.
Yes.
Which album?
This was the Joshua Tree.
Oh my God! Like, you never heard Sunday Bloody Sunday before?
No.
Oh my gosh! That's a crime.
Yeah,
that's a crime.
Right? I know. No, I'm not bitter about it, but sometimes I'm like, my parents like did me such an injustice. You know,
they did me a disservice.
Being such a music fan and like having to like scrape these things together. You know, I didn't hear the Beatles until I was 18, because my journalism teacher happened to have Sgt. Pepper's, you know, in the classroom, and we listened to it while we were writing articles and stuff. You know,
wow.
And that's the kind of stuff your parents should play for you. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. My strictly Christian mom, who like has rules about what music I was allowed to listen to and everything, man, I still caught her listening to the Beatles when they came on the
radio. Yeah, I didn't know that. I mean, at one point my dad was really into this Kenny G album. That was about, you know, that was like the height of it pretty much. So
nice.
Yeah.
Wow. He sounds like a badass.
Yeah, he has his moments. So this
lady handed you a seventh Angel album, Lament for the Weary, and now we have a whole different direction to take this conversation. Pretty much, you're into metal.
Yep. Now I knew what it was. Now I understood the difference. It made so much more sense.
Okay.
So we were in Cambodia for a little while longer. I was there for 4 years altogether. It started to get, it's just an intense place to live. You know, there were more, like I said, coup attempts, things like that. The neighbors, eventually we did move out of that giant concrete building in the middle of Phnom Penh and into this little suburban area, which was a little bit more peaceful, but then, you know, the neighbors had AK-47s, and then when it would start raining, they would shoot at the clouds to try to get them to stop. Things like that. It's just a different world. It's some kind of cultural thing. I'm not really sure why they did that. But so stuff like that would happen, and we just kind of, you know, acted like it was normal. still no internet at that point. You know, that was didn't exist there. My dad did eventually buy like a cell phone. It was, you know, like this big. And, you know, I never used it or anything, but it was kind of weird that we had that. And so obviously that shoebox of tapes, you know, wasn't lasting more than a year. So my dad was like, man, I need to get some new music.
And
I was
hello.
Like, yeah, we do.
And hello, so I lost you.
We've somehow figured out that there was a music distributor in Australia, right? My dad had learned of this distributor. I forget what they were called now. But he was like, yeah, I want to, you know, order some music and books and stuff. And so he somehow got a catalog. And so for a while there, you know, we'd get these catalogs like every 2 months or so. Somehow they made it through the mail. I don't know how that happened. And there occasionally an album would pop up that kind of looked interesting. So my dad would order it for me. Nothing of note, I don't think. But eventually we realized, oh, hey, we can order a CD-ROM from them. And it has their entire database on it, right? And so me and my brother, you know, we poured through this database and crazy. Again, it was kind of, you couldn't really hear much, right? They had a few audio clips in there, but all of it was like, you know, oh, Idle Cure sounds cool. I want that CD, you know. Right. So some bad choices were made. just ordering like shots in the dark, you know. One that was kind of, I kind of lucked out on. One of the catalogs had highlighted the Speckled Bird album by the Choir.
Oh, okay.
Just based on the description, I was like, Dad, can I order that? And at first I was like, oh, this is a little different, but really got into that. That I think is one that pretty much still holds up. It's a pretty good one.
Speckled Bird.
And think one of our little packages that somehow made it through the Cambodian mail system. I still marvel at this, but it came with this little flyer in it, like a little pamphlet from Tooth & Nail Records. Had never heard of them before. Had no idea what it was. And this was maybe end of 94, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so
showing up. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But there was quite a bit of stuff in there. Some of the albums that were listed were like The Blamed, Chatterbox.
Right. No, I mean like finally you're getting something on time. Finally.
Exactly.
Like 94 is like
timely. It wasn't like 10 years later.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But then again, I had to decide which one to order. I mean, by the time you factored in the exchange rate and all that kind of stuff, they were pretty expensive. So
okay. Okay.
For Christmas I could get like two CDs, right? So and of course all, you know, whatever money I got from grandparents or whatever, that's where it went, you know. So
okay,
I ordered.
So I'm curious. Yeah. What was your pull?
Okay, so I picked the Blamed second album, Frail, just Yeah. And that and I'd never heard punk before, right? And I knew that was a genre as well, and I could just kind of imagine what it sounded like. And then, of course, this is like hardcore punk, you know? So
Right.
I remember the first time I played it, I was just like, oh my goodness, you know? It was a moment. And then along with that, I ordered Tourniquet, Vanishing Lessons.
Oh.
So I would just kind of go, and I missed Pathogenic.
You like, just missed.
I know, right? I retroactively bought it later, but yeah. So Vanishing Lessons is still my favorite, probably because of the nostalgic aspect of it.
I didn't know that.
What came before that.
Right.
But yeah, so those two albums kept me occupied for a good while. Those were a big deal.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason I picked the Blamed album, it was based on the little blurb underneath it. It was like, it had yell vocals and it was hardcore thrash punk. And I was like, okay, I think this is the one I'm going to go with, you know?
Nice. So when you first heard like post hardcore punk styling, right?
Yeah.
What was your first initial thought? Like, oh yeah, I do like this. This fits. I'm digging this because I like the grit and the grunge. Or was it like, ah, this isn't Seventh Angel. I don't like this.
Well, so first impression was it was just so much faster than anything I'd heard.
It was okay.
Easily the fastest thing, like form of music I had ever heard, you know?
Okay.
And so the tempos and just the, you know, that real just that intensity that they had, it was like a shock to my brain when I first heard it, you know?
Okay.
And so first listen, I was like, whew, okay. But part of what helped me, because I got the artwork with it, right? And it had a really cool layout with like real like weird Photoshopped photography and stuff. Again, I've never seen anything like that before, you know?
Okay.
And I was the kind of, you know, because I was so limited in what I could get, anything I got, I would listen to it, even if I didn't like it, and keep listening to it. And eventually I could appreciate most things. There are always things I could go back to more than others, right? But after a few listens, yeah, that they totally got me with that CD. That was pretty awesome. So, yeah, I was into it. I was sold.
Dang it.
I still have it, yeah.
Yeah, don't get rid of them. Nope, oh, I got rid of all my tapes, then I got rid of all my CDs.
I don't have a lot of those tapes anymore, sadly. I switched to CDs at some point when I was in high school, and don't know what I did with my tapes. I ended up just giving them to my brother or something like that. I don't remember
right.
What
happened, so. Trying to flush all the Bon Jovi out of them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, so this was like 94... probably end of 94 or 95, something like that. And then I met a friend in Cambodia that handed me some random stuff. He was into stuff like the 77s and Mad at the World.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool too. He was the guy that his parents would, you know, screen all his CDs. And so the 77s were evil because they had secular lyrics, I guess.
For crying out loud.
Yeah, I know,
if the
right?
77s are evil, oh my goodness.
Well, they have that Pray Naked album, man. It's edgy stuff. I know, right? So anyway, he somehow snuck the CD from his dad and let me borrow it, and so I could make a copy of it, and I gave it back to him. So,
right.
That's how I got that. So anyway, I ended up moving to Malaysia in 96. Basically, I basically acted like I was okay.
Ah! Aren't you dying to hear what happens next? There's the first half with Bjorn. I'm gonna cut it here. See y'all next week. Thanks so much for tuning in.
love you. Take care. Bye-bye.